Notebooks and newsbeats, hear that piano rail. Take down the facts, Ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace, trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street. And now, recorded live in Studio C at KRBS Radio, it's Dan and Tom with Left Turn on Bird Street. Welcome to Left Turn on Bird Street. I'm Dan Gowerthy, and this is
Tom Nato.
And we're broadcasting from our flagship station, KRBS, in Oroville, California, the city of gold in the Golden State. And you can catch this radio on the air if you're in range of KRBS, 107.1 FM, low-power FM in Oroville, California. Or you can hear us and other KRBS personalities web stream live at www.radiobirdstreet.org. Or you can catch us later by going to our Left Turn on Bird Street's blog at www.ltobs.blogspot.com and click on the episode links in the right-hand column. Or you can click it up at our website. So thanks for joining us today. We certainly appreciate you spending some time with us. And Tom, we have an interview arranged, so why don't you introduce our who our guest is?
We have Chuck Smith, a labor organizer. Is that correct, Chuck?
Well, yeah, I'm with Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Actually, we're doing sort of half good because we're setting up, as we said earlier in the episode here, that we're putting in a new system for recording all this, and we had some confusing points when we're recording you, so we think you're coming through fine and probably are, but maybe a little raggedy this time around. We were going to talk about a couple of things today, as we mentioned before. What's highest on your agenda?
Well, today, actually, down at the semi-annual meeting of Operating Engineers, Local Union
We're getting the level.
In Sacramento. Can you hear me?
Believe so.
Okay. At any rate, I'm outside the Sacramento Convention Center. We're getting ready to start the semi-annual meeting here about 1 o'clock. And on the agenda, first and foremost, is Katrina Relief Fund. We're raising money for things that are going down in the Gulf area, but to the heart of labor is the effort by Arnold Schwarzenegger to silence unions in California. On the ballot on November 8th is Proposition 75, which is an attempt by Arnold to minimize union participation in elections.
Are you a Warren Beatty fan?
And Arnold Schwarzenegger tried to take pensions away from police and fire and public employees. Those particular unions, including our own, took out some ads against Arnold, and all of a sudden his popularity started dipping. So Proposition 75 is a way to make it so burdensome for unions to participate in elections that they're going to wind up spending a ton of their money just getting the permission of every one of their union members every single year. Pete Wilson tried this. We defeated it at the polls under Pete Wilson. And of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's really Pete Wilson in an actor's mask, is trying it, and we hope to beat it back. But people need to understand that it's an assault on workers, Proposition 75.
You know, I've always...
Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Chuck, did we just lose you?
No, I've been talking and talking and talking exhaustively about Proposition 75.
No, we got it all recorded. Don't worry. You know, I've always felt that what a union should do is throw up an alternate proposal that any corporation, publicly held corporation, should put this on the initiative ballot, that they need to get approval of all their shareholders, you know, make that a burdensome expense. If you wanted to go tit for tat in the same measure, because that's really what it is. It's more cumbersome, obviously, for a labor union.
That's a great point. First off, corporations outspend unions something like 17 to 1. For every dollar that unions spend in politics, corporations are spending $17. But yeah, let's make the Chamber of Commerce get permission. Meets one of its members every year. After all, the Chamber of Commerce is a union.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, there's a story going around.
Oh, wait. You know, Tom, you need to come over here.
Chuck, there's a story going around on the internet that Warren Beatty was telling the Nurses Association that he might run. Or their people are speculating as a result.
You know what? I don't know anything about Warren Beatty except didn't he play in Dobie Gillis years and years and years ago?
Dwayne Hickman.
I think I saw Darryl Warren Hickman. Beatty as a guest star on that one time years ago.
Oh yeah, okay. I must have missed that episode.
And of course,
Sheila Kuhl is already on the Kuhl, as it is.
Well, I know that, you know, I suppose rather Warren Beatty than Arnold Schwarzenegger. There's a couple of good Democrats in the race already. Phil Angelides, and I think he's getting most of labor support. And Steve Wesley, who founded eBay and has a lot of connections down in L.A., that's going to be a very interesting Democratic primary. And as long as those guys don't beat each other up, one of them ought to come out strong enough to give Arnold a pretty good run for corporate America's money.
One thing I want to interject here is that we have...
You know, the other thing is, Senate Bill 840 is still kicking around out there, and that's the initiative that... Senate bill that will provide health care for every Californian from birth to death, and they could do it by spending $8 billion a year less than we spend in health care right now in California.
Oh, you know how the reaction is going to be from the GOP? It's going to be cradle to grave, cradle to grave.
Communism.
Right, right.
Socialism. But tell me what health care plan is it that doesn't have an element of socialism in it when you throw money into a pot and you share it.
And what exactly is wrong with socialism?
Is that a question?
I mean, that's sort of a rhetorical question. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, tax breaks are socialism upward.
Look, I don't care what you call it, but when people can't get health care and they die in the streets, that's just wrong. And there are capitalists and Republicans who die every day because they can't get health care.
Right.
They ought to be taken care of. You know, all these capitalists and Republicans ought to be taken care of, just like communists and atheists and Christians and everybody else. They ought to be taken care of equally.
I'd vote for it. I could use a little care myself. The one thing I want to point out is because of the first efforts to do this correctly, there may be some buzzing in the background for this, and so we won't make it a long...
Are you sure that's not the FBI?
I'm not.
It's Alberto Gonzalez.
I'm more worried about it being like the what's the one in Bourne Supremacy, the Threadstone or Redstone project.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, where they listen in on certain words and it trips the if you say the certain word terrorist enough, it terrorist. Well, it'll kick in.
Now we had.
It'll kick in.
Now there was a couple things. You're also active in the, or at least an inspiration for the Yuba Sutter Democratic website, are you not?
I'm actually the web novice for the Yuba Sutter Democratic website, which great article in there that was added to the website last night about a certain Yuba County supervisor and his racist comments regarding a. The Maidu Indians who lived in the Sacramento Valley for 10,000 years. Now he claims they don't have any legitimacy and they shouldn't be allowed to build a $120 million resort hotel casino in Yuba County. But his opposition to it is pretty interesting because, first off, not only does he refer to the Indians as those people, but he claims that one of the reasons that we shouldn't have a casino in Yuba County is because the Colusa Indian Casino actually is so dirty that people get food poisoning in their kitchen. And he said that on a local radio station.
Where'd that
I'm
come
from? I'm hoping that the Colusa Indian Casino certainly picked up on that and has something to say about this guy's rather odd approach to fighting the Indian Casino in Yuba County.
You've been a reporter. You read the newspaper.
He also claims that the Maidu were treated fair and square by our government.
Well,
I think that, you know, if hunting Indians for sport or bounty, if that was fair treatment, we need to stop treating them fairly.
That's kind of a surprising conclusion to reach, but as this food poisoning didn't happen everywhere at one time or another.
Well, it did, but at any rate, it's very interesting, especially in the Central Valley, people's attitudes about history and about the sense of fair play. It doesn't exist in a lot of politicians in the Sacramento Valley.
Are there any other top issues right in front of you these days in your work?
Well, again, I got to get back to Arnold Schwarzenegger's attempts to destroy unions in California. I mean, and take a look at the Schwarzenegger's agenda is parallels Bush's efforts, and if you see, one of the first things that George Bush did after Katrina was to away with prevailing wage on the rebuilding in New Orleans. So I suppose he thinks that the best way to help rebuild New Orleans is to put less money into the effort instead of more, to allow American companies to make more money instead of spending the money on their workers. So, you know, by executive order, George Bush,
I like that.
Did away with prevailing wage down there, and that's just another further assault on the American working man and woman.
Well, just in case we haven't connected this correctly and we are getting this buzzing that I'm worrying about, we're going to keep this interview short, but we certainly like you to come back. And since we actually live fairly close, we'd like to have you come down for another interview at greater length and clarity on some other issues, and I give you a little bit more warning to the invitation next time.
Well, Tom, I'd be happy to. You guys do great work at Left Turn on Bird Street, and I always enjoy listening and always enjoy an opportunity to talk to folks about issues that impact working people and social issues.
Well, we've been trying to have an impact. I don't know if you were able to hear us earlier, but we're now web streamed, so you can get us on the web.
I'm really excited about that because I think that programs like this, they're so important and they're much more interesting than, of course, the latest thing on Fox News.
And I also, since we're close neighbors, I'd like to talk to you about an antenna on top of my head, by my house. Anyway,
you want me to put it up?
No, I want to find out if, you'll understand the joke better when we talk in person. We can't do it right now. Don't rule it out. Don't rule it out. Anyway, thank you again very much, Chuck Smith, from the Operating Engineers Union at OE3.
Well, thank you.
We'll see you. And, one thing I wanted to tell you is that not only are we web streamed, but we're rebroadcast three times or four times a day with KQRP in Salida, California, and also not quite as frequently on WCRV in
Cherry
Ridge, Pennsylvania.
Hello, Salida.
Hey.
Hello, Pennsylvania.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
And thank you very much, Chuck, again, Chuck Smith. Dan, he's being very conservative. He has some actually good, interesting ideas and opinions that are even further out than that.
Is that right? Well, you know, he brings up a very important point, though. We are more than, well, I guess a special election is going to be held in about a month and a half from now, early November. And this is Schwarzenegger's special election. And really what he's trying to do, he being Schwarzenegger, is bust the backs of unions. And you could call him another Pete Wilson. In fact, Schwarzenegger has quite a few of the people on his staff that served under Wilson's administration. And this is, you know, Schwarzenegger is doing nothing more than trying to complete the screw job that Wilson tried to perpetrate on the citizens of California. And that's really what Schwarzenegger is trying to do. He's trying to bust the backs of the unions. And, you know, the other groups that he's gotten really ticked off, and you don't want to get these guys ticked off, are firemen. I mean, he's got them in his crosshairs. And firemen are well paid, and they have very favorable union rules. And I think Schwarzenegger picked the wrong fight when he went not only after the nurses and the CNA, but the firemen. I mean, you mess with the firemen and you're going to pay, you know. But beyond those two unions, really what he's trying to do is bust unions in California, change us to a so-called right-to-work state like you have in Texas. And that's all this is. And he's Wilson light.
There was
Wilson strong.
In a community that I will not name, there was a ballot initiative thought up, sponsored, and backed by the firemen.
Oh,
and,
right.
Right, and it was a pay raise of sorts, benefits and stuff like that. And their slogan was, vote for our initiative and we'll come to your fire. The opposite being, if you don't vote, we won't.
We might not. You know, there's a fire, well, we might not come,
well,
you know.
Amazingly enough, some objections were raised about that slogan.
Well, you know, there's another proposition, and we're going to have to do this in maybe our next show of Left Turn on Bird Street. I started seeing ads on the television for it, and it's something about a drug benefit. And you start looking at the drug benefit, and it goes there, say, well, this is going to be costly to American consumers and whatnot. And who, lo and behold, is sponsoring this? The drug companies. At the end of this commercial, you see this ad was paid for by Merck, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer. So, you know, they're trying to spin this in such a way that it's going to be bad for consumers. But you know darn well, if you see down at the bottom the little disclaimer, and it's actually not that little, it was big enough where I could read it, that sponsored by the drug companies, this initiative or this advertisement anyhow, you know it's got to be good for consumers and bad for the pharmaceutical companies. And this is another one of Schwarzenegger's initiatives on this thing. And basically what he's trying to do is, and I like what Chuck said, we might as well start calling him Schwarzenbusch, you know?
Exactly. I wouldn't have thought of that.
You know, he's trying to break the backs of the unions.
Bush and Nigger wouldn't be very good because
Schwarzenbusch. I think we should call him that. You know,
we're going to do internets. We may as well do Schwarzenbusch.
Yeah, well, we have Schwarzenbusch on the internets. But really what he's trying to do is just complete the work that Wilson tried to push through 10 years ago. And it's nothing
actually,
less than
actually, should
that.
We make that Schwartz and Cheney?
Schwartz and Cheney, yeah, because Dick Cheney really is the one running things here in all actuality. You know, if you look at it, it's Cheney running things, not Bush.
Anyway,
Bush is just the figurehead.
We were going to talk about things like Rita, the hurricane that everybody's talking about, but a lot of bigger and more well-funded groups are doing that. But as long as we're on politics, there's one story that I picked up that,
yes.
If we're done with that,
yeah,
that we should mention because it's kind of interesting. Gore angling for 2008 presidential run.
Yes, indeed. That'll be interesting to see what happens in the primaries with Bush, or I'm sorry, with Gore if he can get out of the primaries. But go ahead, why don't you tell our listeners.
His presidential run is what the New York Post Inside Washington columnist Deborah Oren is talking about, and also through, I found this on Newsmax, another website that I follow. It's conservative, but you got to know what the other side's saying.
Right.
Our reporting. Al Gore's poised to make a comeback and could pose a serious challenge to Hillary Clinton in the 2008 Democratic presidential race. The former vice president is suddenly reemerging as a vocal and visible Bush basher, Oren notes. A Democratic insider told Oren that Gore, who is set to star at a Democratic National Committee fundraiser next week, is keeping a very strong public profile. He was the first major Democrat to oppose the Iraq war. He's keeping in touch around the country and doing a lot of speeches. You don't do all that if your goal is to play celebrity golf.
That's right.
Oh, that's a great line. But anyway, should Hillary worry? You bet.
Iraq is the hot-button issue for the furious anti-war Democrats, and they could have an impact on the presidential primaries. Gore opposed the war from the start. Clinton, Hillary, voted for it.
And I think she still supports it.
Sure. Hey, that's the safe side.
Right.
And I get on to this a little bit later. But Oren writes, it's one thing for Clinton to contemplate a 2008 anti-war foe like little-known Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin. It's quite another to face the move-on darling who's won the popular vote against George W. Bush, she said, the reporter says. A top Democratic strategist told Oren, Americans love comebacks. He could come back as the new Nixon, somebody who went into the wilderness and found himself.
That's right.
Iraq is the, Oren writes, it's one thing, I'm reading back over the same stuff.
Have some more coffee, Tom. Okay,
yes, oh, more, that'll stop it. A top talking point about this should be the Democratic Leadership Council, that group that scuttled Gore.
Right.
So that they'd rather give it up to Bush to hold the seat open for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And that is about as dastardly an action, especially now when viewed back over what we got as a result of them scuttling a legitimate candidate from their own party in order to protect the interests of that conservative Clinton clan.
Yeah, the I see a lot of problems with a Hillary Clinton candidacy in 2008. First of all, I think people, particularly in the so-called blue states, aren't ready for a female president of any party, of any political persuasion. I think that's, that's the first strike against her right there.
Regrettable,
but true. Yeah, it's regrettable. That's not to say we have many, women politicians, not nearly enough, but many
who
are well qualified.
Sheila Kuhl, run her. I'd vote for that.
She is. You know, just as a side note, you know, I was at a few years ago, Tom, I think it was in 2000, I was at a legal secretary meeting, and she was a guest speaker there. And she gave up, and she got up there kind of just, you know, she was their guest speaker, gave a, impromptu speech, you know, unrehearsed, unscripted. One of the best speeches I've ever seen, very educated. And basically what she was telling all these legal secretaries, it was great. I wish I had recorded it. She was basically telling them, look it, all of you in this room are well-qualified, smart. Trust me, she said, you're smarter than most of my colleagues. She's in the assembly at that time. And I went up to her afterwards. I said, that was a really good speech. I said, why aren't you running for governor? And she kind of smirked and laughed at me nicely. Nicely said, well, because of my sexual orientation, she's out of the closet. She's smart. And she was also Gilda on Dobie Gillis. This twice we talked about Dobie Gillis.
Right, yeah.
Anyhow.
And we should preserve his memory forever.
Right,
my favorite program of all times.
Right.
Anyway, the legal secretaries, I used to cover their meetings.
Yeah.
Which I think the first one I went to, I said, a legal secretary, is that one over 21? and that didn't win me any friends. I was joking.
But getting, as we so often do on this show, we veer way off topic. But getting back to...
Well, you know why that is, Dan? It's because you read the news and it's so bizarre, all you can have is humorous thoughts going along with it.
That's true.
Sometimes it's so bizarre, it's sad and scary, but personally I'm unable to not see the humor in something, even in the darkest moments.
But getting back to Hillary Clinton and women politicians, I don't think the country is ready for any female president, regardless of her party, much less Hillary Clinton. Can you imagine the pillorying? And from a liberal or progressive point of view, I don't think that she's been towing the line too much on political expediency or safety. You know, she supported the war in Iraq, and she still hasn't come out against it. So, for me, right there, that disqualifies her.
She's weathervaning everything
else.
Which way is the wind blowing?
But I think Al Gore, you know, early on, I think he, if I'm not mistaken, he did come out against the war, from the very early stages, and he accurately predicted what the sentiment of the country is going to be. So he may well be positioned to get the Democratic nomination if, for no other reason, a payoff, I guess.
Actually, positions on any issue are not going to be war, death, taxes, nothing. It's not going to be the factor that's going to determine election results coming up. The and
what might they be?
Corruption.
How so?
Well, we've been talking about this a lot. This has been one of our big themes, corruption in government. And
right.
boy, were there plenty of examples to cite.
There still are.
But I ran across a really interesting article on the web, of course.
Tom, it's not the web, it's the internets.
Go
ahead.
But if it's the right, left, if it's the left side of the political, if it's on the right side of the political spectrum, it's the internuts.
They're nuts. Go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
I found this on truthout.org. And Sterling Newberry, who's an internet business and strategy consultant and expert in e-commerce and forensic database analysis. It took me a while to figure out what that was. he could. That means that he can go in, and if you've been bombed or knocked offline or there's some scurrilous stuff going on today, he can forensically track back and find who did it, like a forensic doctor would do an autopsy. Okay.
He does this on the internet?
That's what it says here.
He works for DARPA, huh? Anyhow.
Could be. But he seems to be a liberal. Anyway, comes this article on governmental corruption. School forest scandal. That's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 1980s and early 1990s, there was a series of procurement scandals surrounding the Pentagon, and an aggressive congressional investigation ensued, perhaps too late. It began to reform the procurement process. The list of corruption scandals from the current Republican dominance of government has grown ever larger and ever longer. But it has not yet boiled over. Strangely, it is often personal misbehavior that topples a government. And this is what I'm getting at.
I see where you're going with this.
Jim Wright's sweetheart book deal and the kiting of checks from the congressional co-op were more damaging to the old Democratic Congress than any government scandal. When Newt Gingrich and the Republicans took power, they promised reform. And yet, despite millions spent on hearings, investigations, and an impeachment, they were unable to find the massive waste, fraud, and abuse that is a mantra on the right as to what is wrong with government. That's the part where I don't think is going to count.
Right.
The first decade of this century has been different. Money has been misallocated in Iraq to the tune of billions, with billions being readied for relief in the wake of Katrina and Rita. Many are now worried that this money will be wasted. After all, FEMA had what the Washington Post called fatal weaknesses in its response, despite billions spent on it. However, while the grumbling has increased, 70% of the respondents to a AP Ipsos poll said America should have been better prepared. There has been no public hue and cry for an investigation.
Right.
And questions are now growing louder about whether this Congress is able to investigate an executive branch of the same party. Makes sense to me.
Well, there's a lot of questions amongst people who are in the know. I would say that.
Exactly. In fact, the Republican Congress killed their own investigative panel when it was clear that they couldn't agree on the ground rules among themselves,
right.
Let alone with the Democrats who opposed any panel without subpoena power. That's what I want to know is if you can't make come and say,
right.
Then you can't get them to testify. That's
right.
They let Bush come to testify, but only
with Cheney
and all off the record,
right.
And not under oath.
Right.
Instead, the shot heard round the Beltway had to do with Senator Bill Frist and the SEC investigation of potential insider trading.
Right.
Jonathan Katz of the Post reported on Wednesday that the Senator Frist conveniently dumped his shares of his family health care company just before it suffered a 15% drop in price. I want to interject here. Dan, I want to ask you this. A health care company dropping in value 15% as prices for everything skyrocket? Now, does that sound like bilking money and then stealing it?
Well, they're bilking money, stealing it, and then probably they're getting, you know, because I have this story right here, actually, from the Washington Post. They probably got word that they were going to be under investigation from the SEC or Health and Human Services or something like that. So, you know, they dumped it a month ahead of time before the value of it dropped 9%. And that's a lot of money. It has millions of dollars. But he, you know, I'll let you go back to this, but Frist allegedly, or supposedly, he has a blind trust, but according to the story in the Washington Post...
That's to keep you blindfolded.
Exactly. He communicated regularly with his people in his blind trust, but go ahead with your story. This is a whole other matter.
This is the point, part of the point, that Newbery makes that I... it resonates with me, as they like to say on Meet the Press. The cause of this price drop was a disappointing earnings report. Exactly the kind of news that Martha Stewart just spent time in jail for knowing about.
Yeah, exactly.
On Wednesday afternoon, Senator Frist received a subpoena from the Securities and Exchange Commission, prodded perhaps by press reports. On Friday, federal prosecutors also began investigating Senator Frist. In 1997, Thomas Frist, Bill Frist's father, was investigated for insider trading in the same company. And while he was cleared of charges, that is to say he wasn't indicted,
right,
the incident makes it harder to believe that mere coincidence is involved in the present case. This pattern of personal scandals bringing down officials is not limited to the Republicans. New Jersey lost a Democratic governor and a senator to personal scandals, but the appearance of misallocations of personal impropriety seems to weigh more heavily on the public mind than much larger misallocations of public money. In other words, they don't care if you waste money that the government spends on something they don't care about. When it touches them, and we're coming to the main point of this, it isn't clear why that's so, but perhaps it is merely that personal scandals start to be discovered at the time when reporters begin to smell corruption. They're also easier to prove, and they motivate people more directly. Spokane's mayor, James West, faces a recall election. Organizers for the recall turned in 17,000 signatures on a petition drive, needing only 12,000. People were mad. And I want to skip down here. They go and talk about Michael Brown. We all know about that. And Lester Crawford, the FDA commissioner who blocked the morning after pill, and more corruption further. The old rule is that corruption follows the money. With George Bush on track to increase federal expenditures by the largest amount since World War II, beating out even Lyndon Baines Johnson, more than a few people are beginning to wonder whether it is time to shut down Washington's school for scandal. Someone is going to have to pay for all this, because if $150 billion is the price tag of Katrina next year, and defense and entitlements are off limits, the choices are raise taxes or shut down half of the federal government.
Right.
And signs of that is exactly what is going to happen. The General Accounting Office, the government's green eyeshade agency, just came out with a report saying that the, get his, Dan, I want you to talk about this,
yes,
saying that the mortgage and property tax deductions in the tax code cost the United States over $728 billion a year in uncollected taxes, and these deductions would need to be removed or reduced to pay down the deficit. This sets up a showdown between those who have gotten huge tax breaks in dividends and large incomes and the middle class, which gets most of its reduction in income taxes from mortgages and property tax reductions or deductions.
Right.
And you can bet that every homeowner knows to the penny what the mortgage interest deduction shaves off the family tax bill. It's real money. And as he learned very early in the, and he being the author here, Newbery, learned very early in the game is different as soon as the chips represent real money.
Yep, that's for sure. Well, who do you think the Bush administration is going to favor, the middle class or the really super wealthy who, you know, with the estate taxes? They're going to support the estate tax people. And the other thing of that is mentioned in there, this is going to be a golden opportunity. You know, there's going to be a big push, I think, on one hand by the fiscal conservatives headed by people like Grover Norquist to drown the proverbial federal government in the bathtub, like he said several years ago.
Well, you know, you said it before, nobody cares about Iraq war until their son is drafted.
Yep.
And they're not getting drafted, so they don't care.
They don't care.
Well, nobody cares about the deficit until it reaches into their deductions, and then they care.
Right, then they're going to care. And what's going to happen then? You know, I mean,
they should have seen indirectly right now. It's always already been affecting them, but it's too distant. You'd have to stop at least 30 seconds and think about it.
Right. You know, well, you know, what it'll start impacting people you know, and we've talked about this over the last couple of years, you know, it's going to start hitting people when it starts hitting people in the pocketbook. And when I use this example, I mean, they're talking about $200 billion in the aftermath of Katrina and Hurricane Rita. And there's no sign that the government's that Bush is going to propose any tax increases. In fact, they're going to still try to push the permanent elimination of this estate tax through. They're going to try to make these tax cuts that Bush enacted permanent. And where are we getting this money from? Where are we getting this money from? Well, it's obvious. If you don't know, we're getting this money from foreign governments. We're getting it from Japan, India, England, and notably China. And we're basically mortgaging our future to these other countries. And eventually, what's going to happen? This is pure economic kind of theory, and in actuality, it will happen. Interest rates will eventually start going up because they're going to be borrowing more and more money. And then it's going to hit people in mortgage, and people that have these interest-only loans who speculate in real estate is going to come crashing down. And it's only then that people will start looking at these things. And we've long said that on this show, and I seriously believe that.
We're borrowing money from the same people we won't let into the country clubs.
Exactly, but you know what? They, specifically the Chinese government. You know, I think notwithstanding our borrowing, this is going to be the 21st century is going to be the century of China. I really think that.
Yeah, well, numbers are anything.
Right, numbers are anything. But if you go beyond that, they're basically gonna they got us. You know, they got us. They can squeeze us.
They save.
Yeah, they save, and we spend. We have this society where we are told continually to spend, and you know, we loan money to people for interest-only loans to buy a house without any equity in it. So, and it permeates our government. It starts really. My wife Jenny and I were talking about this last night. People borrow, buy houses with no money down. And it's just like the government. I mean, we've set up this whole system. The mentality in this country is that we're going to borrow money, and we don't have to worry about anything in the future. Well, sooner or later, we have to pay. And the day's going to come where we're going to have to pay for this.
You know, one of the things, I used to live in San Francisco and spend a lot of time, and actually lived in North Beach, famous,
right.
You know, up on Telegraph Hill. And North Beach is cheek by jowl with Chinatown.
Right.
And as the population of Chinese expanded, and North Beach was an Italian neighborhood.
Right.
As the population in the Chinese neighborhood expanded, they started to acquire the businesses and apartment buildings over in North Beach. And what was really interesting, and this is the philosophy, it's not a racial thing, is that the new North Beach, while the Italians dominated it, the doors were open, the windows were up, the curtains were pulled back, and people were shouting on the street, and they were playing the violins, and hey, guy, what you doing, you know?
Right.
As right down Grant Street, as the Chinese took over, they kept the business down there that made the money, but they lived upstairs.
Right.
All the curtains closed.
Is that right?
Nobody was on the street. You get down there at 7 o'clock at night, and it was as dead as a doornail.
Is that right?
I had to walk through up there to get up to my place on Telegraph. Anyway, and they saved money. They worked hard and they saved money. Well, that's really good. That's how they could buy the building.
Sure.
Well, that's what's happening with China and the United States. And as soon as they own everything, those curtains will be shut.
Yeah, you know, and people don't recognize this.
Yeah, and so it's going to be a very uninteresting century.
Right. Well, going back to what I was saying is, they basically are the mortgage holder. They're holding the mortgage of this country. We've really given it over because Bush has sold this scheme of tax cuts, and really, you know, it's a redistribution of wealth away from poor and middle class, and you could even argue upper middle class people, to the very wealthy in this country. And do you think these people, these very wealthy, are necessarily holding their money in American currency? No, they're diversified. So when the collapse comes, they're not going to be, they're not going to be one screwed. It's going to be, the other 97% of us in this country who are going to be the ones, left to pay for this. And I know I sound like a doomsdayer, but you know, you go back to 1992, and you know, I've said it three or four times, I've said it a couple dozen times on this, the little megalomaniac from Texas, H. Ross Perot, was really right. The guy, you know, he's a kook, but he's our kook, as Molly Ivan said. He is right about the deficits, and you know, we've lost track of this, and Bush has sold the American public, and this goes back not just to Bush, but this goes back to Grover Norquist and the K Street Project and all these other groups who've convinced people that paying taxes is a bad thing. You know, if you want good levees in New Orleans, if you want good levees here in the Central Valley of California, you got to pay for them. You know, otherwise, look what happens.
Yeah, well, that was... So what's a levy done for me lately? Why do I need that? Well, right. Now you're finding out.
Right. You're going to find out someday, sooner or later, and that's what's going to happen with our economy.
But my father, who is from Maine and, you know, Yankee and thrifty and
right.
Common sense, but he used to say, it's in a politician's interest to tell you that it's in your basic interest for... letting me take your money out of your pocket and put it in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, it's good for you.
Well, anyhow, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other week here on KRBS from 8 a.m. till 9:55. And we're also heard on KQRP in Salida, California. So thank you for joining us today. And we're just going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our last segment in just a moment.
Is that where we get to talk about kinky sex?
Oh, yeah, all the good stuff. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Thanks for listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're here for our final segment, so thanks for joining us today. And of course, no show of ours would be complete without a funny story, which we'll end the story with. But before we go into a kind of a funny, interesting story, our sex story, as we promised, right, Tom?
Right, right. And kinky.
Kinky sex, no less. You know, I last night I was looking on the internets about news about Iraq, because it's kind of taken a back burner recently. And two things, you know, there's not a lot of in-depth reporting, as far as I can tell, into what's going on in Iraq in the American mainstream media. You have to really look to foreign sources of news. And I came across a kind of interesting story on the Scotsman News.
That's a good site.
Yeah, it's Scotsman.com. And the title of the story was Iraq ripped apart by
Iran soon.
Yeah,
right. Iraq now.
Iraq ripped apart by suicide bombs, gang warfare, and secularism. Is that my
secularism?
Secularism.
Oh, sectarian. Oh, I'm sorry. Sectarianism.
Sectarianism. Okay. Now that we got that right.
A sect is a not necessarily a religion, but it could be just a tribal group.
Right. Let me just read a little bit from you. And it starts by saying, safe inside Baghdad's Green Zone, the concrete barricaded headquarters shared by the Iraqi government, foreign diplomats and contractors, the official line is that the situation in Iraq is one of progress towards democracy and a gradual handover from the U.S. and allied U.S. and allied troops to Iraqi control. But just a few minutes walk away in what U.S. security jargon describes as, quote, the red zone, the daily reality involves death, random violence, and routine deprivations for most people. Meanwhile, across the country, chaos still reigns in most public services, electricity cuts are common, and the water supply is sporadic. Chronic insecurity means that few new jobs are being created. And the story goes on to give a blow-by-blow description of various areas. It talks about, first of all, the Sunni Triangle, Western Iraq, Basra, Kurdistan, and in those areas. And basically, the gist of the story, it gives in fairly good detail what is happening in each one of these areas. And I'm not going to go over what's happening other than you can find the story on the internet. Excuse me, the internets. But basically, what it points out to me is how American mainstream media is really underreporting or not reporting or even glossing over really what's happening in Iraq.
Completely agree with you on that. But I want to point out something that emerged from your reading there.
Yes.
That the green zone is where the big U.S. Diplomatic installation
right.
is. And the red zone is any place else in,
right.
in Baghdad or any place, or practically any place else.
Right, any place outside the rest, okay. yeah, in the country.
So there must be a yellow zone, and I think that's around the White House there.
Yeah.
That's where they're really yellow.
Yeah, that's a good point. The real yellow zone, like chicken hawk yellow. But what it really points out, and to me, you know, I put a post on our blog earlier this week about it, I think, unfortunately, still, even though they had the massive demonstration this weekend in Washington against the war, with crowds estimated, depending on who you read, anywhere from 100,000 to 300,000 people, I still think that most average Americans don't really care what's going on over there. Although public opinion, public opinion has definitely turned against Bush as it should have. But I think it's
a hurricane here and not a war over there.
Exactly, exactly. I think public opinion is turned against because of the slow reaction in New Orleans. But I don't think I think the Bush, they still have a green light to do what they want to do over in the Middle East, because most Americans really, I don't think, care about what's happening in Iraq as long as it doesn't affect their lives. What's in it for me?
What's not in it for me?
Right. And this goes back to a point that I've made over and over and over and over again. It's two words. There's the reason why most Americans really don't care is because the draft. And specifically, there is no draft. So most middle-class families, and that's, if you look back in the history of Vietnam.
And there's no even draft in which everybody, even if you're going to college, have to go.
Right. And, most people really don't care about it because, hell, my kid isn't over there is what they think. And I think it kind of saddens me because I think we're going to be in kind of, as long as Bush is in power, the neocons, and from what Tom's saying, he thinks that in 2008 they're not going to let go of the power until the American public wakes up or until they start running out of troops over there. People are willing to go there. Until there's a draft, I think we're going to be in a constant state of war. And I don't really see any light at the end of the tunnel. Now, even with the public opinion going against Bush, I don't think that's going to stop them because they're so narrow-minded. And
well, it's because public opinion doesn't mean anything to them anymore.
Right, exactly.
Opinion equals votes. You don't care how the votes are cast because you know how they're going to come out.
Exactly. So it's depressing, but I think that's the reality of the situation until middle-class families, I'm picking on middle-class suburban families, but that's really when these people wake up to it, and they're not going to wake up to it until their kids are sent off. And that's, like I said, if I said it once, I've said it 100 times on our show, is that's the one thing that I do believe the Bush administration, when they say that they're not going to have a draft, because they know that if they draft middle-class kids and send them off to war, the public will turn against them. And instead, they're going to rely on recruiting poor, uneducated kids that have little options to fight their war. And I think that's the sad truth of the matter.
Well, this brings us around to this. We haven't talked about it and probably should have. The marches. In the cities,
yes.
Demonstrations, Washington, D.C. principally, but right nearby here, San Francisco.
Right.
And I struggled with this because I was thinking about going down to that.
Right.
Because of, my views. There were a couple other factors, but I felt, you've got to do something about this physically.
Right.
But I realized, Dan, you and I are doing something about this.
Yeah, we are.
We're talking. We're trying to convince other people. We're doing a different kind of
right.
demonstrating by doing it on KRBS, WCRV, and KQRP, and any other stations that'll broadcast to anybody else who wants to listen.
Right, and I think maybe the lesson should
be... We've been doing this for 2 years. Yes. They're just showing up now.
Right.
So, in fact, we're more demonstrators than they are.
And the, I think the broader lesson that people that listen to this program and people that come in contact... You know, if you're against the war, I think there's been a real, and it's maybe changing a little bit now, but there's been a real hesitancy on a lot of people who might otherwise be against the war or be against the Bush to speak out against it because of fear of humiliation or not, you know, quote unquote, supporting our troops. But, you know, I think every chance you have to voice your opinion to other people, the better off we all ultimately will be, because people have been basically hoodwinked into, you know, thinking that speaking against this war is somehow undemocratic or unpatriotic or un-American. And if anything, it's, you know, if you value our constitutional rights, it's really what we need to do. So.
And can we talk about sex now?
We got 1 minute. Go for it.
Oh,
Tom.
I need more time.
We might have
to
save this story.
Well, then I'm going. Well, you
this
know why
don't ultimate do, news
but I will
tease.
I will tease it. Is that this is from the BBC News? It's
yes.
about face. It's they have a series on what people do for a living and who holds the power.
Right.
And they wisely turn to a dominatrix, and submissive behavior by people. We will say this because it's actually fairly long. Goddess Vanessa is the person they
she have a 900 number?
I think she may. is a professional dominatrix. Okay, she lives in New York. So it's only a long-distance phone call away.
That's right.
She says that I got started early on as something fun that I thought I would try out. It was role play. No experience necessary. No nudity. At that point, I had a big notion of whips and chains and leather, but I don't think I really understood the psychological dynamic. I started working at a dungeon. You can see why I want to do this one. Down on the left, take it's in the corner, 626 C Street. There's a dungeon down the back. See, I started working at a dungeon. The formal introduction was to come in. And observe. I was in for about 5 minutes before a light bulb lit up, and I said to myself, I understand this.
So, well, you know what? I think we need to link this story on the blog.
I think I will. But let's talk about this in detail because there's so much fun we can talk about here.
Well, hold on to it. We'll talk about that on our next show.
Yeah. She goes on to say, Sebastian is one of my clients. I will call him and tell him when I have time to meet with him. So if I just want to be pampered, I'll tell him to come over at a specific time, and he'll bring over some groceries or things that I'll need, and he'll give me a foot massage. And other times I'll be in the mood to be a bit more aggressive and to play with him, and he makes himself available for that. We get into heavy bondage. We try different things in terms of compromising positions for a man, including hog-tied on your knees, hands behind your back, so that your ankles and your wrists are tied together, and there's another piece of rope that comes around so that your head movement is also restricted by your ankles.
You know what always goes ahead.
And then we get into some meditative flogging.
Meditative flogging.
I think I'll flog this guy.
I think I'll beat the heck out of you.
Now, I would really like to take some time in another show. And then there's not only meditative flogging, there's heavy flogging.
But
she makes money.
Money, probably.
Well, sex sells.
Well, you know what always amazes me about this? It seems like every 2 or 3 years there's some politician who's caught up in one of these scams like that. You know, I guess what does that say about politics, you know?
Although he wasn't necessarily into flogging, Strom Thurmond, 100 years old, caught with sex for, you know, I mean, the different race. I mean, the whole thing.
Well, you've been listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other week on KRBS from 8 until 9:55. Thanks for joining us today, and Tom was going to link this story up on our blog, are you not?
Yes, and you must remember that the views expressed by us on this program are not the responsibility of the station or anybody else.
Yeah, and that's our little legal disclaimer, but they should be. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again soon.